you pick up the additional 8 cents anyway, is that correct?
That's correct.
At that point, we're at 43 cents.
Then, right? Then we're at 43 cents more.
Right.
Keep saying when you get to $4, I'm like,
well, it's the, so you, Hugo, Representative Hugo would like to move to amend the times it by 10.
Not unless we put all the forms of tobacco on the tent.
In the back of your book where the original 2183, there is a chart there which shows Oregon relative to some other states if you're interested in tax rate. The second set of amendments, the 2183-7, now, do essentially the same thing as the dash 5, except that they're going to take 1 penny, essentially 1 cent, away from the cities and counties and distribute that to a elderly and handicapped special transportation fund. So in addition to the changes that are in the slash 5 amendments, we have in section 9 of the amendments the creation of the elderly and handicapped special transportation fund, and in section 10 the way in which the public transit division is going to distribute the money from this fund to transportation, mass transit, and to the counties, depending upon how transportation services are provided. If there's no transit or transportation district in the county, the money goes to the county itself. There's 27 of those counties that would fall into that category. Where there's a mass transit district in the county, or serving a portion of the county, the money's going to go to the mass transit district. So for all of the money, okay, so let me back up for a second. The money is going to be distributed proportionately with population to each county. Okay, so there'll be some share of money which is due to Multnomah County, Clackamas County, and Washington counties. All of that money will go to TriMet. There'll be some portion of the money which is due to Polk counties and Marion counties, and all of that money would go to the Salem Mass Transit District. And all of the money which would be due to Lane County would go to the Lane Transit District. Now, there's a couple other situations where we have transportation districts as opposed to mass transit districts. And in those counties that are involved, again, all of the money goes to the transit district, or the transportation district.
Richard, how do we know that that money is going to be spent for seniors and handicapped transportation after it's sent to the transportation district?
I think Section 12 pretty well assures us how that money is going to be spent. The third subsection of Section 10 does require an advisory committee to be set up in each one of these districts or counties before they can receive any money. And it's the purpose of that advisory group, as defined in Section 11 there, to review and make proposals as to how that money should be spent. In Section 12, first thing that Section 12 does is require that the money must be spent proportionately within and without the transit district. In other words, if we look at, again, Salem as an example, Salem would get the money for all of Polk County, and it, Section 12 requires that it spend that money proportionally with the populations inside and outside the district it actually serves. So it's going to have to provide, not provide, but it's going to have to spend the money in the western part of Polk County there that's not in the transit district in proportion with the population inside and outside.
Mr. Chairman. Sam Scone? Richard, you worried me twice with your references to Polk County. Polk County also has a senior and handicapped transportation board and district, in effect, of some type. I don't know exactly the composition of it.
Yes.
It seems to me that we're sending it to the wrong group, if your references to Polk County are truly correct.
Well, actually, the transit district itself does not provide any service for elderly people in the in either Marion or Polk counties right now. They simply contract out to have it done. And what we're looking at right now is an organization that will pass through a fund. We're not looking at, this bill does not require anybody to provide any service. We're talking about how the money is going to be handled, essentially, up to the point where it's contracted out for the provision of the service.
I guess maybe to clarify that, what the distribution goes to the transit district, but the transit district itself does not provide the service. It's merely acting as a funnel to get the money down to the districts or to the organizations that are providing the services.
Well, I guess
that's what
really concerned me, Mr. Chairman, is we've got a district to provide the service in Polk County, and we're going to send the money to the Salem Mass Transit District for distribution to that organization, and I have some concern, I guess, that once a district sees that pot of money come in, that they're going to say that, well, now we really should be the ones that should be providing this service to the extent, at least, that we're servicing the county with other services, and pretty soon we have lost the money that should go rightly to the senior transportation district.
But I think the bill was drafted to sort of prevent an expansion of the authority of the existing transit district. It does not give Salem Mass Transit District authority to provide service outside its boundaries.
I think what we might need to do is to get Senator Cease here, because this has taken language out of 2276, which is essentially her bill, and she has made amendments to it since then, and I think it was essentially her decision to go this way, and so maybe if she could explain maybe the political reasons or whatever other reasons she had for deciding to distribute the money in this fashion.
Chairman, would you make sure she's here at 10:30? I think she'll be here anyway, but I would like to have Senator Cease here at 10:30 to participate with us when we actually get into the adoption. I think rather than moving the dash 5 to the dash 7 now, let's wait until we come back at 10:30 after our caucuses, but at least we know what's in the original bill and the two sets of amendments. Any further questions at this time on either the dash 5 or the dash 7 amendments?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hugo?
As a rookie on this committee, I've got to ask a question.
Certainly.
Why is it that only cigarettes are being taxed and no other tobacco products?
There are some good reasons for that. States which have a sales tax, which we do not yet have, find it fairly easy to identify where tobacco sales of other tobacco products are taking place. The cigarette tax is imposed at the distributor level, and cigarettes are very well controlled and fairly well identified at that level. Other tobacco products are not. Smoking tobacco or chewing tobacco, which is sold retail at the retail level in Oregon, may come from anywhere. And it would be, first of all, those taxes tend to yield a small amount of revenue proportionate to the cigarette tax. And they're much more costly to administer. You're not dealing with the same people that you deal with when you're taxing cigarettes.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hugo?
Well, yes, a double bill question. On the one hand, how much money will this penny provide for the elderly and handicapped transportation? And secondly, we're talking about a small amount of money, as you say, with all the tobacco products. How small?
Well, it depends on the tax rate that you're thinking about imposing, of course.
Roughly comparable,
43 cents.
Let me say half about, I think, is what we're talking about, around $4.8 million, I think, for the one penny that we provide to the elderly and handicapped special transportation fund. And I think we might be talking, it depends on what rate, but roughly somewhere in the area of $1 million a year on the tax, which would extend to smoking tobacco, cigars, chewing tobacco, and snuff.
Chew. I was corrected by some fourth graders the other day.
Chew. Fourth graders? Now I know it's time to talk.
My son.
Any more, Bruce?
No, it's just that I'm I don't know. This penny, I'll support the penny, but it does seem a little odd that we're taking a penny from cigarette tax for a transit problem or transit opportunity, as opposed to a transportation-related tax, whether it's gasoline or something else. People looking for an additional penny somewhere. The other forms of tobacco do escape taxation, and it would seem logical for me to be more willing to support picking up the other forms of tobacco sales and taking the revenue from that and dedicating that to the handicap transit account.
Sam Hostigan?
Yeah, for Representative Hugo, last session I was a freshman member of this committee, introduced a bill of the type you're talking about. The imposing presence of the representative from Beaver Creek, I think, effectively precluded serious consideration of that measure. I would support any efforts
and a former co-chair of Ways and Means.
Oh, that's the fellow with that circle in his Levi's.
Yeah.
Same Corey.
Well, I guess I have to join in. I don't know if we're talking about administrative convenience again or what we're talking about, but it does seem to me that it makes sense, and I'm not sure why we don't pursue it.
I'm certainly willing to pursue it. I'm not sure we want to do it in this vehicle, but we have plenty of other vehicles to committee we could probably join up.
Let's do it.
If it's the sense of the committee that we want to do it, to quote two members to my left, let's do it.
Mr.
Chairman. Mr. Treinhorn,
I'm getting a little off the subject, but, or maybe back on to the subject.
Mr. Chairman, can I make a comment on the
okay,
last
comment, Representative Schoon, and then we'll go to George, if that's okay, George.
We did have a hearing in revenue Representative Ron Cease's bill to cause non-smokeless tobacco products to be labeled. And we saw some appalling statistics and examples. We had youngsters there that testified that they are chewing, and it is very carcinogenic, very dangerous. And one manufacturer has increased his sales some 900% over the past couple of years, and their advertising is directed right at the youth market. And this time they're skipping saturation of the male market and saturation of the female market before they attack the kids. And they're directing it right at the youth market, and it's working. And I think that it's perfectly appropriate to tax it, no matter how much trouble it takes. Yeah. We'll collect enough to pay for the administrative costs.
Do we have a vehicle we can schedule for Wednesday morning?
Mr. Chairman, I want to add one other point. Yeah, that's it.
Thanks, Scott.
The representative from Beaver Creek favors this idea because he is concerned about his kids using chew, and is somewhat in favor of the idea of having a slight tax on to provide educational programs to kids not to use this stuff.
Interesting.
So Shiprag is in favor of it too.
Well, let's do this. Let's schedule 2276, which is the transportation vehicle. That's now a vehicle that no longer is needed. Let's schedule that for Wednesday and take some ideas on non-tobacco. I think we might want to keep the discussion separate from what we're going to be deciding in these three vehicles today, but we'll schedule that for Wednesday. Representative Hostick, you had a bill in during the 83 session. Representative Cease has a bill in that you indicated. Now, what committee did you hear that in?
Consumer and Business Affairs, and we've got that. We've got a hearing scheduled on that today. We could even refer that on down to you.
Would Representative Schoon, do you think it'd be more appropriate to not schedule it at this point, but wait for Business and Consumer to refer it down to us, and we'll go ahead and schedule that vehicle and use that as the vehicle?
Well, probably it'd be better to go ahead and schedule the transportation bill and see what happens. We can't act until tomorrow anyway, so we probably ought to go ahead and schedule the transportation bill.
Should we wait and schedule a transportation bill on Friday and give a couple of more days for the thing to percolate and then take it up here? And,
sure.
And if we want to do something, there's at least, I think even the most optimistic of us say there's at least 3 weeks left in the session. And so we would have the opportunity then to do something and try to expedite Senate action.
Yes, see it.
Okay, schedule 2276 for Friday then, that vehicle?
Yeah, something that has the right relating
clause. Something that has a proper relating clause.
I presume it does.
Anything further on 2183 at this time? No, we haven't adopted either set of amendments. Excuse me, George.
When we're done with that
this morning.
That's okay. I wanted to get the total revenue raised from each of these, from this breakdown now.
You gave us the $4.8 million from the 1 cent.
Okay, we're estimating that the 8 cent addition, which replaces the sunsetting 8 cent federal tax, will raise $44.6 million in total. And extending the
8 cents is 44. What?
Six. And extending the 10 cent state sunset will raise $47.8 million. Now the share of the, that's a combined total of $92.4 million, and under the /5 amendments, under either set of amendments, actually, the 73.3 would go into the state's general fund, and then 19.1 would be available for local government. That would be split 50-50 under the /5 amendments between cities and counties, and it would be split 5/54 to each of the cities and counties, and 1/27 to the elderly and handicapped special transportation fund.
Did anybody bring my computer? How's that
work? Yeah, you want to know what those numbers are?
Yes, please.
Well, repeat it. You said 2183-5, it's 50-50 split. And then you said something else.
The /7 amendment.
Yes.
Okay. What we'd have is 5/54, which is about 9%, going to each of the cities and counties, which is oh, 5/54. So that, yeah, that doesn't work out. Let me review that. Yeah, you got 2.5/6 going to each of the cities and counties. Okay.
2.5/6.
Right. Do you want 5/12?
2.5/6 is fine.
Okay.
I think I'll get a calculator.
So that's roughly $8 million going to each cities and counties.
And 3 going to transportation?
3.2.
That's in training?
That got it.
You see the first numbers I referred to, the 554 and so on, in the section 13 of /7, which is the total, which is being distributed there. So the 7/9 still goes to the state general fund.
If you're ready, let's go to 2182 and get that laid out for us, and then when we come back, we'll be ready to debate and adopt and reject and whatever we want to do.
Is the 85?
Should be a tab 2182 in your bill book, again towards the back. 2182 deals with the $85 tax credit for personal exemption. It should be the bill there, and then one set of amendments. Bill, in effect, replaces an indexed personal exemption amount with an $85 tax credit amount, so that the reason there are 3 or 4 pages to the bill is that it's going through the ORS and changing the reference from a personal exemption to personal credit.
Right.
So that's the basic contents of the bill, an $85 tax credit. As the bill is written now, that $85 would be indexed for 1985. Okay, so the -4 amendments do two things. One, it delays indexing 1987. And secondly, there's some language change as to how that indexing would be done. Current law uses the Portland Consumer Price Index as of July, divided by the base year to get the percentage increase. But that Portland Consumer Price Index is being changed, right? It won't be put out on a bi-monthly basis as it has been in the past. It's going to be put out only twice a year now, and so it will be a six-month average price index for Portland. So the dash four language changes that reference to the Portland Consumer Price Index.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hostica.
Steve, what would be the effect if we simply deleted all of Section 3? Yeah,
Section, if you deleted Section 3, you would delete indexing.
She shouldn't have
put this down. And also, well, you couldn't, let's see. Yes, yes, you would still have the $85 tax credit in Section 2.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hostica.
If we deleted Section 3, then nothing would preclude the 87 session of the legislature from coming in and instituting indexing if that was their desire in 87, would it?
I would think that, yes, that they could do that.
And if we keep it, what it means is that unless they act, indexing starts in 87.
Yes.
So that the 87 session, Mr. Chairman, I just want to make a comment. We'll believe it. Again, I think it would be more honest for us just not to refer to indexing at all and let the 87 session look at this with a clean slate rather than putting this kind of situation in here where they'll be faced with the same situation that we've been faced with the last two sessions, at least, of looking at sunsetting revenue measures and then having to continue to do something where they're continuing a tax rate being called raised taxes, or if they allow the law to take effect, they could claim that they were reducing taxes. And I think you just get into some reverse logic that just doesn't do the people very well when you put this kind of sunset in there. So it would be my preference to delete Section 3 entirely rather than have this kind of reference to the statutes.
Mr.
Jim Trahan?
The way the bill's drafted, does the personal exemption sunset the $85 credit, sunset in 2 years and go back to an exemption, or does it continue on beyond that, whether or not it's indexed?
Would you repeat?
Presently, that?
Would we go back to the $1,000 credit in 87?
No, we would not. The $85 tax credit is a permanent change.
Okay. It's not a sunset as we've had in the past.
No. No, you would not go back to a personal exemption in place of the $85 tax credit as drafted.
So you say the consumer price index changed from a bi-monthly to a semi-annual.
For Portland, yes.
For Portland.
You would, if you still wanted to use a particular month this year as compared to the same month in the prior year or base year, you would have to go to the U.S. Consumer Price Index.
So I guess that raises an issue of whether we want to use the Portland or whether we want to use the U.S. What, out of curiosity, what's the stability, consistency difference between the two? Do we see more variations in a localized CPI or in more stability and consistency in a national figure? How does that work?
Well, in the past, the Portland one has been less stable than the U.S. Part of just makeup as to how the Portland Consumer Price Index was put together. Now that has, and that's part of the reason for changing the frequency or reducing the frequency of publishing the Portland one is to, again, have a six-month average rather than trying to do it every 2 months. And I would think that would create more stability in that index and make it more comparable, if not very close, to the U.S. average.
Okay.
Representative Burroughs?
What I heard you say was that it's not the economy that's unstable, but the way it's calculated or the factors that determine?
Right. trying to do sales only in the Portland area on a bi-monthly basis created some problems. And part of it, if I recall correctly, too, dealt with how housing was done, the housing portion of the index was done in the Portland area, right? But that again has changed.
Further questions on 2182?
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Treasurer?
Just so we all understand, would you give us the total dollars raised?
Okay, for full indexing, right, so if you had indexing for both years of the biennium, $54 million. I guess I might as well go ahead and give this to you in the increments. If you delayed indexing 1 year, started indexing in 86, that was a plus 17.
Equals 71.
Yes.
Plus 12 equals 83.
You're right, if you delay indexing 2 years.
Efficient tilde, right? That's the, if we index 85, it produces 54. If we index 86, it produces 71. If we don't index until 77, it produces 83. Or if we were to delete section 3, as Representative Hostick indicated, we would still produce 83. Anything further on 2182 before we recess until 10:30?
A million here, a million there.
If not, we're in recess.
We're
going to give up five and reconnect. We're going to give up five and reconnect on that retroactivity.
Easy come, easy go.
I don't know.
We were back to county sheriff
He's great.
Oh, good. You see it.
Is Trayner signed up for all of this?
Yes, he's agreed to support everything.
Carry it.
Carry the modification.
Mary will carry the reconnect. George will carry the other two.
You might not like it that way.
A few minor modifications. We'll tax the non-cigarette tobacco products. Let's start with House Bill 2011, which is the reconnect measure. We have adopted all of the amendments to House Bill 2011. We adopted House Bill 2011-25, dated 5/24/85. So presumably we're poised to move this measure out of committee unless there are any further suggestions, discussion. Representative Treasurer?
Mr. Chairman, I would move to amend the amended version to not go back to the 1984 adjustments, but rather to start the reconnect on 1185. And I'm not sure what sections that goes into, but that would be for both personal and corporate.
Do you have those sections on the tip of your tongue, Jim, or do we have...
Barbara should be here.
Barbara?
Sir Steve.
Huh? Steve, would you please come up? Dick, would you please get Barbara for us? Thank you. Steve, we have a motion before us to alter the effective date to make it effective 1185. What sections of the bill would need to be amended to reflect that change, if in fact the committee were to adopt the amendment?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Before the retroactivity, Steve.
Mr. Chairman, that'll be section 13 on page 8.
On which portion? On ACRS?
No, on everything.
Page 8.
The 84 versus the 85 retroactivity question?
Oh.
On the whole bill?
Oh, I see. All right. Yes, I know what you're asking now. Let me check this. In the amendments. Problem is, things have moved around in dash 25 from where they were in dash 24.
I have section.
Dealing with the 84 Tax Reform Act is section 50 of page 19. I think that's what you're looking for.
That's in the dash 25 amendments.
Yes, it is.
Section 50, page 19.
That's dash which amendments?
Dash 25, section 50, page 19 and 20.
So that just require. Can we go 84 to 85 and 101 to blank? Let's see.
Okay, what change would we need?
Placed in service rather than refer to the tax year.
But we presumably could be going back to a prior fiscal year for ACRS where we're not going back to a prior fiscal year for the other provisions of the Reconnect.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like that there's a contradictory policy statement there if, in fact, by the nature of the decision, there is a contradiction between the two decisions that are being made in the bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Steve Schoon?
I don't think that's right, but I'll defer to Steve on that. I think we do probably reconnect for some other items as of 12/31/84 or after that date, and so there would be other items that could be affected, and somebody that had already filed a tax return between that date and the date becomes law.
Is the treatment for ACRS and for the other provisions of the Reconnect after we've adopted the Trahearn Amendment prior to adoption of the Hostica motion, is there a discrepancy in treatment there?
I'm getting lost in this, but
Jim, jump in if you feel so inclined.
See what Steve has to say. The Trahearn amendments, take you. Take away going back in the 1984 and making any of those changes applicable to 84.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But if on the ACRS side, if it's only going to apply to any property placed in service in 85, which, as the bill is now, could affect an 84 tax year for a fiscal year taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. Whereas the Trahearn Amendment I think could still affect an 84 fiscal year taxpayer.
Your is good.
So I guess I see them both potentially affecting that 84 tax year.
Representative Hugo?
I wonder if I could ask Steve, the timelines you've been drawing on the board are very helpful to graphically demonstrate this issue. I wonder if you'd be so kind.
Go ahead.
Good suggestion, Bruce.
Okay, now, let's see. Let's talk about ACRS first.
Okay.
I think that's the easiest to see. Okay, the two options that the subcommittee discussed was given a January 1, 85 property placed in service date on or after January 1, 85, you're affecting all the property from that time forward. The the question was, given some tax year, fiscal tax year that say started July 1, whether property placed in service in that time period would be eligible to that taxpayer. Right? There, the two, originally the bill said after January 1, 85, and in your tax year beginning in 85. So if your tax year started at this point in 85, any property placed in service here was not eligible for ACRS. Right? Now, what the change that was made then was that, all right, we don't want to do that. We want anybody that places property in service after January 1, 85 to be eligible for ACRS, regardless of whether the tax year started here or not. So if you think of this as the 84 tax year and that the 85 tax year. Okay. Now,
show us what
the other issue is. Then, right, using
logical, look at the train here next.
On the 84 Tax Reform Act, again, same January 1, 85 deadline, most of the provisions of the 84 Tax Reform Act take place somewhere in the last 6 months of calendar 84. They have a transactions that occur somewhere June, July, whatever. Most of them are, I think, are in that last 6 months, but not necessarily all of them. Okay. Now, for the personal or the individual taxpayer, personal income tax return, there's no problem because most of them are on a calendar year basis. Right? If you had that as your starting point. If you allow it to go back here on the personal side, then you start affecting the 84 tax returns.
Mr. Chairman. Since Scott?
Allow or require, though? I think we were talking about require.
Require.
Not yes. Allow. Require.
Okay. Now, on the corporate side, you have tax years starting all over the place. So, when you pick up that reconnect date, Barbara, help me out here in terms of that reconnect date being applied to a tax year. In combination with this, are you looking at tax on the corporate side? Are you looking at tax year that begins after that date? That
would be January.
Transactions.
Right. See, so put an 84-85 fiscal year up there,
okay.
Just like you did on the ACRS.
Right. Well, let's assume that it's a different.
Right. Well, why do a different one? Don't you just?
All right.
Just do it so that you can see the same one.
6 months, 1 year, 6 months, the other.
Okay, now, the Trahearn Amendment would pick up that year, the 84-85 fiscal year, and say, or would not pick up that year, would say you use the old law during that year, and you would start beginning July 1 with the new provisions. Okay, so that's the 85 tax year, and the previous set of amendments in this case would say that is the 84 tax year, and so none of those provisions of the reconnect are effective for the 84 tax year on that fiscal year. So the question is, for that 84 fiscal year, is it going to be effective? For that 84 fiscal year. In this case, with a fiscal year taxpayer that ends July 1, none of these provisions will be effective until July 1, 85, except for ACRS, which would take effect January 1, 85, and would affect the 84 tax year. Now, that's, of course, not necessarily a typical taxpayer,
could be November, November.
It could be, or it could be all the way back to January 1, 84.
Or November of 84.
Right, it could be November of 84 to November of 85, or January 1, 84 to January 1, 85.
But I should have looked at some, tried to find those numbers of corporate returns in their fiscal years. On numbers alone, a lot of them are calendar years, and over a majority, I would say, start in somewhere in this first 6 months.
First or last?
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Start. We're saying try
here. Mr. Chair, I think we need to recognize that there are differences. The 84 Tax Reform Act made a bunch of subtle changes that we were talking about going back in that 84 year adjustment. And that's different than a particular fiscal item that you put into service that you, in fact, identify what it is and set up a depreciation schedule for it. And it's not a whole lot of other different things. It's a given item, or a group of different given items, if you will. And that's why it seems more logical to me to set that January 1 date as we have in the bill, but not to require all these little changes that could go back in 84 years.
Representative Hostica?
Well, I guess counterpoint on that then is if a person had an 84 tax year that, say, ended on April 1st of 1985, they would be in the process now of filing their return, or at least have had to have filed their return before this act becomes effective law, which is 90 days after we adjourn sine die, whenever that may be. So that if we adopt this January 1st, 85 date, then anything that they placed into service between January 1st and April 1st of this year, they could potentially go back and amend their return and say, now the new law says that we're going to change how we treated that piece of equipment in that time. In fact, it would apply to anybody who has a tax year that ends before the law becomes effective, even though we know that you have a certain amount of time after the end of your taxable year in order to file your return. But there could potentially be a number of people who have already filed returns who this law would affect if we adopted just one single date.
Chairman.
Representative Burroughs.
Rolina, I think I'm right, unless we put an effective date of January 1st of 86, we're going to have amended returns one way or the other, regardless of what date we choose, if it's anywhere in 84 or 85. Is that not correct?
Representative Burroughs, for the record, I'm Berlina Crosley, Oregon Department of Revenue. The current law basically says that ACRS is not applicable to assets placed in service, and then it uses the taxable year. So if you put them in effect after the taxable year beginning on or after January 1st, then it would be under ACRS. So any of those items that were placed in service after the taxable year's beginning on or after, theoretically, because you're going to do that with this mm-hmm. committee, would be applicable to ACRS, and you would not need an amended return to do that. When you take a look at what the law says right now, ACRS would be in effect because it would be the disconnect would be sunsetted, basically.
Okay.
So you would not need an amended return in that instance.
Good point.
That's a good clarification.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hostiger?
Just to clarify then, Berlina, the amendment that I've been talking about, or the motion I've been talking about, would bring us back to current law. Is that?
Yes, Representative Hostiger, that is correct.
I like my motion.
Why do we need your motion then?
Because the amendments, the -25 amendments, had amended current law to fix a date rather than talk about taxable years the way that Ms. Crosby was mentioning.
Further discussion? You're ready to vote?
Would you repeat? Somebody repeat the motion?
Yes. Carl, you want to repeat your motion?
I guess technically, Mr. Chairman, my motion is to restore language which had been deleted on pages 8 and page 15 of the original bill, which would have changed the effective date of ACRS from taxable years beginning on or after January 1st, 85 to simply January 1st, 1985. So it's to restore deleted language in the bill on 8 and 15.
Sam Scone? Well, since the current law already has us disconnected in effect, it seems to me that, I was going to say that we probably wouldn't have to have those amended returns, but I suspect maybe we would in some cases. Would we, Verlina?
Representative Schoon, I think that if taxpayers were following the law to say that for assets placed in service after tax years beginning on or after January 1, that you would not need amended returns. If, in fact, they were not following and then realized that they didn't, then you're going to have an amended return.
But only if they were not following the law.
Current law, correct.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Pardon?
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Jim Trager?
Well, I guess one other thing that perhaps should be brought out is that they wouldn't be required to, if they're going to take advantage of this and they fall, and it falls into the odd year type tax year, they wouldn't be required to file an amended return. Might be to their benefit to do so, and we might have some, but I don't think it would be a lot of them.
Further discussion? Tilda, please call the roll on Representative Hostica's motion to amend.
Representatives Hanlon?
Aye.
Hostica?
Aye.
Hugo?
Aye.
McCracken?
No.
Schoon?
No.
Trahern?
No.
Calori?
No.
Burroughs?
Aye.
Troop?
Aye. Motion adopted. We now have the main motion before us, which is to send House Bill 2011 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Tilda, please call the roll of the motion.
Representatives Hostica?
Aye.
Hugo?
Aye.
McCracken?
Aye.
Schoon?
Aye.
Trahern?
Aye.
Calori?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Burroughs?
Aye.
Troop?
Aye.
Skip.
Motion's adopted unanimously.
That's the quote of the day.
Any other business to come before the yes?
No, no, no. We have two other bills.
Mother one.
Should we put one more in?
Next, let's take 2182, which is the $85 personal exemption or credit. Jim Burroughs?
Can we just stop here and tell us what your agenda for this committee is in terms of timelines today?
Like lunch.
The intent is to work until we're done and then break for lunch and then have whatever other responsibilities we have this afternoon to be achieved.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McCracken?
For the information of the four of us who are on E&E, I put E&E on call. So it would be my plan to allow an opportunity for a very short lunch break for whenever we finish, and then we'll come in later this afternoon.
The lounge might send down
sandwiches. We're excused from the floor session for the purpose of any meeting whenever we get to it.
I'm going to miss so many votes today. We might just have the lounge send some down.
Well, let's get our work done. I'm hungry. If the rest of you are hungry, let's just get our work done and go eat.
Let's go.
House Bill 2182. Let's see. Is that whose bill is that? Is it yours, Steve? Yeah. Pretty straightforward. We do have a set of -4 amendments before us. And those -4 amendments, Steve, would you refresh our memory on what the -4 amendments do again, please?
Okay, two things. One, they delay indexing until 1987. So you would have the full $83 million revenue impact. Secondly, they changed the reference to the Portland Consumer Price Index because in, I believe it's January of 87, that index will be changed and no longer published on a bi-monthly basis. So something will have to be done differently. And this sets it up so that you are using an average of the first 6 months of a calendar year compared to the base year to calculate the index.
Chairman. The Dallas Chamber of Commerce supports this 11-1 and one undecided. In case anyone. That's helpful.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hostica.
I think that before we broke, I had been discussing, rather than the dash four amendments, the possibility of simply excluding section three, which, if we adopt the dash four amendments, makes the promise to the people that we'll start indexing in 87. And I guess my feeling is, while some people may feel better about that promise, past history has said that we're better off not making promises regarding sunsets on revenue measures. And if we believe that we should not be indexing between now and 87, we ought to just say that this legislature doesn't want to institute indexing and leave it to the 87 legislature then to do indexing if they want.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Burroughs?
I can't support that, and let me tell you why. I don't think we've had a full discussion, and as I understand it, the feds are already trying to figure out how they can back off, including the administration, from indexing. I think we need a full discussion on indexing, which is a priority among some members of the House. I want to have a full discussion during the interim on the impact of indexing with an expenditure limitation. And that goes into the 2% kicker. I think we have to deal with that whole discussion. I don't know that you can index with an expenditure limitation and a 2% kicker. I don't think they work in concert. I don't want to deal with it in this bill. I think this bill is it's going to have a tough time on the floor anyway. And if you take that provision that was passed in 79, which has never been used, and some people feel that we passed it in good faith, we've never used it, and I think that if we were to delete Section 3, any borderline votes we might have, we could be losing a lot of votes by deleting that. I don't think we have to delete that. And we need to take more time with that issue. And that would be my suggestion.
Mr. Chairman,
it was kind of a long suggestion.
We could change our philosophy a little bit and keep a promise we made to the people and start the indexing this year. It seems to me that would be a much more logical approach.
Mr. Chair.
Further discussion, Representative Hugo?
I tend to agree with Representative Trahern. It's been 8 years of promise, and we haven't done it. So do we do it or we get rid of it? From a fiscal standpoint, we can't afford to get rid of it. Or we can't afford to do it, so let's go ahead and delete Section 3 of the bill and be honest with the folks that we are not going to index. We are not going to intend to commit further legislative sessions to index. If the 87 body wants to index, fine, let them index it.
Further discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Trahern?
I keep hearing that we can't afford to do this and we can't afford to do that. The sheet that I have indicates that we have proposed by Ways and Means of total expenditures that shows a deficit of $134 million. And this package of bills will raise around $230 million, give or take, with the minor changes that we might have made. And I find it hard to say we can't afford not to raise $29 million of that extra almost $100 million, when in fact nobody's really determined where we're going to spend it.
I think the discrepancy there is we are already sending back presumably $180 million by not extending the 8% surtax, and there is a perceived need by some members of the legislature to provide some continuation of property tax relief beyond the existing HARP program, and I think the $98-99 million that we're looking at there is a pot to have for property tax relief, whether it's some additional monies into HARP, a 30% program reduction, or some combination thereof. But I think it's very clear that the revenues that we're talking about raising in excess of that budgetary requirement would be some property tax money to attempt to fill that $232 million void that the governor recommended in the 30% property tax relief program, and we would be creating if we did not fund that. Representative Hossig.
I just want to amend your statement. We're actually sending back, if we don't adopt the surcharge, $250 million because there's $71 million going back from the kicker. And I think that those numbers sort of make the $29 million we're looking here pale by comparison.
Jim Trahern?
Well, Mr. Chair, we're sending the $71 million back because we collected too much. Let's be honest about that. And I, as you know, I have a bit of a problem saying we should raise taxes so that we can send money back to the taxpayers. It seems like when you do that, you always tend to funnel a little off into government someplace in the process, and maybe that's the other $75 million. I don't know.
I don't believe that's the other $75. That's property tax relief, Representative Trahern. If we don't raise some money for property tax relief, we'll be raising property taxes for every homeowner in the state by some $170 a year. I think there's some feeling that the kind of tax relief that's needed is some property tax relief, and there is a balance there. There is a give and take between property taxes and income taxes, and it's though some of us would like to end the 30% property tax relief program outright, we probably have to do some kind of a phased approach. I think the perception there is that the property tax is the most onerous, and if we were to walk away from that 170, that might cause some difficulty, and that action might be in some disfavor with the public, but that's neither here nor there. Representative Hostica?
Even though I think that sunsetting revenue measures is probably a bad idea, I'll move the dash four amendments.
Representative Hostica moves the dash four amendments, which has the effect of walking away from the discussion that we had regarding the deletion of Section 3. And frankly, I must say I'm a little bit relieved. I would agree with our vice chair that taking a complete elimination of the indexing to the floor in this package is not something that I was necessarily looking forward to. In that I may well be the one carrying the bill.
I'd carry it.
I fully concur with Representative Burrow's suggestion that we need to have some analysis of the indexing question and how it relates to expenditure limitations and other questions, and would like to see us make that an interim topic. But just as soon we preserve the status quo as much as possible this legislative session. Discussion on the dash four amendments, Representative Trahern.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoska mentioned sunsetting, and I'm not sure, and I'll ask the advice of the chair. I would like to look at a sunset on the total $85 exemption, which is not in the present, either the amendments or the proposal. If you would rather work with the dash four amendments first and take that as a separate issue, that's fine. I think it needs to be addressed.
Let's go ahead and take the dash four, and then you can place the motion regarding sunsetting the $85 credit. Representative Burroughs?
Oh, go ahead.
Representative Clory?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask about one of the things that concerns me a little bit is using the Portland Consumer Price Index, and we talked about that just a little bit before we broke for the call of the House. Have we ever had anything other than the Portland Consumer Price Index? Have we used a national or some other kind of indexing method?
Steve?
I think it's always been the Portland one.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
So we've always had a bi-monthly Portland index. This time we go to semi-annual, so I guess that's the reason that we're questioning the wisdom of retaining the Portland. Jim, before we go to Representative Scott?
We did have, if you recall during the interim, a presentation on the different options that you might use. The U.S. Department of Labor that does the Consumer Price Index has expressed a lot of reservations about the local indices, saying that they're not as statistically reliable as the U.S. index. And so that's sort of the plus of going to the U.S. index. This new index should be more reliable than the old just because it's going to be an average rather than any one point in time. So, but nonetheless, they still have that, the U.S. Department of Labor still has that opinion.
Representative Scone?
Well, I think within 1979, when we were discussing this again, we discussed it at great length, and I'd always personally felt that one thing was a little better than the other, but then we looked at a graph that somebody on the Revenue Committee, I guess, provided, and all those things intertwined like a rope. You know, sometimes it would be higher, sometimes lower, but they all went right up the same line eventually. Whether it was the wholesale price index or the Portland index or the U.S. index or the price of wheat or the price of gold. And so they all intertwined and stayed pretty much in relation to each other over a long period of time.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hostica?
I'd say this is a fascinating discussion, but since it doesn't take effect until 87, I think we can have this discussion during the interim as suggested by Representative Burroughs. Move the question.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burroughs.
Different members of the committee have been talking about balancing the budget. And
I'm going to support this because obviously I have some vested interests in with the University of Oregon and some human resources, but I hope that we have a full discussion on whatever the majority party is planning in terms of property tax relief. I'm having a hard time in our discussions about a super HARP. I mean, we really haven't been involved with those. You know, in terms that we have a sales tax sitting out there, and it's like we really don't think you're going to want it. So I hope this committee at some point can have a discussion on that area because...
Well, we definitely will. That property tax relief program that's written will be, number one, written by this committee, and number two, funded by it. And I think one of the reasons that we haven't had a discussion on the majority party's plans or the legislature's plans for property tax relief is because there really are no specific plans at this point. There's some ideas, okay, but there aren't any concrete plans at this point. I wouldn't put them in the stage or the form of being plans.
Okay.
I guess my reaction is that this is probably the stage. If we pass these three bills to the floor and they're adopted on the floor of the House and the floor of the Senate, this probably sets the stage for that PTR debate that the nine of us will be heavily involved in. Representative Hostica?
Mr. Chairman, I recognize the connection with PTR, and I think that all along, all of us on this committee at least, I think recognize the value of having as many options as we have possible in our hands when we enter into that discussion. I think the reason why I'm supporting this and the rest of this package is because with this package, when we begin that discussion, we'll have a variety of options and a little bit of breathing room. If we don't pass this, we're cutting off one of those options and just making it harder and harder for us to address that PTR issue as we go along.
And there's no question that the increment left after the adoption of these revenues will be the first increment for providing property tax relief, and that's exactly where the monies will go to property tax relief. Representative Trahern?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hoska spoke of the options, and certainly he's correct. It would give the committee more options, but the options we would be looking at that point would be how to spend the money or how to give the money away rather than perhaps at this point where we should be looking at whether or not we should be raising it at all.
Okay, further discussion? Taylor, please call a roll on the motion to adopt the dashboard amendments to House Bill 2182.
Representatives Hugo?
Aye.
McCracken?
Aye.
Goon?
Aye.
Trahern?
No.
Calori?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Hostica?
Aye.
Burroughs?
Aye.
Troop?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Chair moves House Bill. Not yet. Representative Trahern.
Chair, I would move to amend the bill.